You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 255 of the CD Baby DIY Musician podcast, where on today's episode, we're going to be discussing the truth about live streaming. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing? Speaking of live streaming, you just survived your 8-hour live stream.
I survived. Last week I did 8 hours straight, actually 8 hours and 15 minutes or something like that, of live streaming. And my voice, it held up. What I should say is I still had a voice at the end of it. I wasn't completely hoarse. My fingers, amazingly, after playing 8 hours of guitar, weren't bleeding. And I was like legitimately having a little bit of anxiety about both of those things. I'm like, was this a really dumb idea? Am I going to do permanent damage to my voice? Am I fingers going to be bleeding for the next week? Neither of those things happened. I was fine. What did hurt was my legs the next day, which maybe just means I'm getting old. I don't know.
Well, first off, I have to say congratulations. Amazing job. Chris may not brag about himself, but I'm going to for a second, that you raised close to $10,000 for medical supplies that you have been purchasing and in the process of distributing. And that was a huge accomplishment. I don't know what your projected goal was, but when I saw the updates throughout the day, I was very impressed and I was very proud of you. I hope that some of our listeners tuned in because you did an amazing job. You held up. I kept watching throughout the day and I thought, okay, later in the day, his voice is going to get a little raspy. You sounded amazing. and you even went longer.
Yeah. Well, thanks. You probably kept tuning in waiting for the train wreck.
No, I was not waiting for the train wreck, but I was just surprised that, you know, it was interesting because I felt like at hour 8, you were still stronger and more present and more energetic and better at the live stream platform experience than many seasoned pros from the major label world that have been attempting live streams over the last few weeks because, you know, that's what everyone's doing. And I thought, man, Chris needs to teach everybody what to do here because he's got it down.
Oh, thank you. No, I was, you know this because you were still tuning in. And by the end, I was crying because I was very, delirious for one, but also very moved. CD Baby kicked in some money, which helped me raise even more than I was imagining. And going into it, honestly, I didn't know what to expect. I thought, well, if I can raise like a couple $1,000, I'll feel like that's a success. And then, you know, almost close to 10,000, I was blown away. And my brother-in-law, who works in an ER in Maine, said, you know, the amount of the item that I'm going to purchase is face shields, and they'll be donated to hospitals and EMTs and stuff like that. He said, you know, the amount that you have purchased of face shields is almost equal to the entire emergency supply that the Maine CDC has. So when I heard that, I was like, okay, damn, that was a good job. So I'll pat myself on the back and also say thanks to CD Baby for helping me earn even more money than I thought I would.
Yeah. Yeah. I was glad we were able to make that happen. And the one thing that I was very impressed with is, you know, I was tuning in, I think I saw like the first or the second hour. And then I was tuning in like for 20 minutes of time throughout the day. And every time I tuned in, you had 40 to 50 people watching. Which I thought was really strong for an 8-hour all day marathon that consistently every time I looked, there was 40 to 50 people watching.
Yeah, it was steady. And there was, Facebook was way more active for me than YouTube, but there was also folks watching on YouTube. And then this really confusing thing happened a few times where someone would tell me, I'm watching on Facebook and YouTube. And then I was like, why? I don't understand. What does that mean?
I want to make sure I don't miss out on anything.
You just really love like latency between two things hitting you. So yeah, That was confusing.
Well, nice work. And people can still see that, correct? It's still posted.
It's archived on YouTube and Facebook. The only weird thing is that Facebook cuts you off after 8 hours. And so the last sort of whatever 15 minutes is chopped into a second video. But on YouTube, it's all one thing. And I also want to give a shout out, or whatever the term would be, to many podcast listeners who for a year or more have been encouraging me to do this sort of crazy thing. Because I always talk about how many songs I have or how many cover songs I know. And I should say, just to pat myself on the back again, I really thought I was going to sort of run out of songs. And I think I had another 3 or 4 hours of stuff I could have played.
That was one thing. Like at the end, it seemed like you got to the point where, you know, euphoria was kicking in and you're like, I'm going to keep going. I didn't get nearly as many songs as I thought I'd need.
Well, and there's I think you've met him actually, a songwriter named Peter Mulvey, who kind of inspired me to do this, because every year he does a 12-hour, what's not necessarily a live stream, but it's a 12-hour concert that's a fundraiser. And so that maybe that's the bar that I'll try to hit next time. I'll go for 12 really play everything I know.
Well, it was impressive. And we're going to be talking about live streaming. And I titled this episode, The Truth About Live Streaming. And it might be a multi-part episode, but really just so many people have been live streaming, jumping into the live streaming world. A lot of companies trying to solve, you can't see me doing air quotes, solve live streaming problems all of a sudden. And so there's lots of information flying around it. It is a great opportunity, but there are some truths that I think people need to know and realize when they approach it. And we're going to talk about those today. We also have some listener calls later on in the show. But before we get to that, just want to remind you of a couple things. It is an amazing time to get new music out there. People have, I would say, more attention span now than they probably ever will again in our lifetime, quite possibly. That so much of life.
You have a captive audience.
Yes. So much of life has been disrupted that people have had to break all their old habits and all the old patterns of things they fall into. It's a great time for people to discover new things, create new connections and new preferences and try new genres of music and new artists. And so it's an amazing time to get music out there. And you can do so at cdbaby.com. I will say, you know, during this time, we just ask a little patience. We've been flooded with many artists doing the same thing. And just a little patience, but we're here for you. Chris and I are here for you. We'll help you through this. We'll get that music out there. So head over to cdbaby.com. Also, if you're interested in trying out our ad product, we have it's show.co, you know, the marketing platform you get for free if you use CD Baby. There's an advertising platform inside of there. You can try it out, and I'm going to give you a coupon right now that's good for $10 towards a campaign, and the coupon is AdBuilder10. So go create a campaign and you can try it out.
Does
and
that
that'll
need to be all caps, by the way, or does it matter?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
There is a $20 minimum for an ad, so you'll still have to kick in 10 bucks. But hey, this is 10 free dollars to try out an ad platform to get people to check out your music in a time where internet usage is at an all-time high. So things are skyrocketing with lots of people online surfing the web. And the cool thing is, related to ads, because of that, the ad prices have plummeted because they have so much inventory. So you'll get more for your money if you try it right now. So check that out. Just head on over to your show.co account. If you haven't created one, just go to your CD Baby dashboard, click the link for free marketing tools, and it'll connect it all together. And you'll be on your way.
Sweet.
All right. Chris, we were looking back at past episodes because we have done a deep dive into your live stream setup. And because you were doing a lunchtime live stream when you were doing it, we did an episode about that. It was episode 231. And we talked through a lot of what you were doing, some of the equipment you used. So if artists are interested in what Chris is doing, check out episode 231. However, I believe it'll be our next episode. I'm interviewing a couple of artists that are also doing live stream, and I thought Chris will have you sort of detail your gear again, maybe things you've learned since that last episode, because it looks like it was a year ago.
Cool. Okay.
And so we can dive into that. But let's start in to our list of truths and discussion about live streaming and what artists need to know about diving into the world of live streaming. And my number one truth about live streaming is that live streaming does not replace live shows. This is not a live show replacement. And I don't think that's just my opinion. That's truth.
That is a perfect place to start. And actually, I made some notes myself. And my first truth is it's not a concert. Not only does it not replace live concerts, a live stream isn't a concert at all. Like, and I feel like maybe what you were alluding to earlier with the major label artists is that they are used to being on a stage with huge production and some distance between them and the audience. They're expressing their brilliance and putting themselves out 100% in a particular way. And the audience is there to enjoy, consume, maybe not be passive about it, but they don't have any direct involvement in changing what's happening on stage. And that is not at all what a live stream is, or I guess what it, maybe it should be, or what people's expectations of this format are. I mean, it's way more casual, interactive, occasionally awkward, and that's all kind of built into what it is. So if you think you're just going to go live and showcase your brilliance and, you know, not talk to people, just run through the songs, it's going to be a strange experience for the viewer. And I had a friend who loves this particular band that I will not name, a huge band. And he was really excited because their singer was going to go live and watched it. And then he was like, wow, you're way more engaging than this guy is. He has no idea what he's doing in between songs. Like, he's just like sort of dumbly staring at his phone. And instead of sort of reading the comment or saying hello to the person asking the question, he's just like saying like, yeah, cool. Okay. like, no. Anyways, I think I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly there.
Yeah. So part of the reason why I want artists to understand this more than anything is because it was this weird thing that happened, for future generations listening to the archives of this podcast, wondering why are they talking about this at this moment in time? We are in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, and it was mid-March where everything really started getting canceled. And so everybody was like, I know what the solution is. We're all going to live stream. And not only that, half a million artists that weren't even going on tour all decided to start live streaming that week.
Right.
and so it really became this, like, you know how in the music industry that when streaming started becoming the dominant format, like, well, I guess artists are just going to have to go on tour to make money. It just became this dominant theme of like, well, I guess artists are going to have to live stream to make ends meet. And it's like, if you're looking at it as a replacement for the concert experience, you're looking for it's not that. It's not the replacement for the concert experience. It is, this is my maybe sub-truth to that, it is an amazing way to connect with fans. But if you're going thinking like, we're just going to set up shop in front of a camera and play our concert down, and this is instead of coming to see us at a show, you're missing the point. There's a show is an experience of itself. There's vibrations of the music in the room. There's the social aspect. There's the production value. There's all those things. But that doesn't exist in a live stream, definitely to the same degree, but in most cases it doesn't exist. And so you have to think about it differently.
Yeah, I mean, I think you either have to proactively find a way to put your viewer in the driver's seat, or accept that they already are because that's what they expect from a live stream and sort of interact with them accordingly. So going in with a super set plan, I think is, well, it's good to have a plan. I shouldn't say that because I also, one other point I was going to try to make is that a live stream in and of itself might not be worth anything. It might not be an event, who cares? But if you have some sort of theme or I don't know. Yeah, something to make it extra special besides just, hey, I'm going live. That's a good thing. But you should also be ready to veer from that plan if your audience is taking you somewhere else.
Yeah. And I should say, for those of you that may be listening at this point that are like, my band can't live stream, or for whatever reason, it doesn't work for me. And we've got some points about that coming up. But there are also some new tools on these platforms that are alternatives to just thinking that live streaming a show or something is your only option. We'll get to those after our truths about live stream, but there actually are some great new features in some of these platforms that you may not know about that are alternatives, especially for those that it might be a challenge for you. So my second truth is it's very noisy all of a sudden, and it might be impacting your reach, especially on Instagram. Because, you know, on this podcast, we've talked a lot about, like, if you go live, that you jump to the top of users' feeds. Like on Facebook, it's very clear. When you go live, it's always shocking to me how many people must just be sitting on Facebook all the time. Because, like, you know, Chris, you and I have been doing these Facebook Lives for CD Baby, and instantly there's people watching.
Uh-huh.
And within 2-3 minutes, there's a lot of people watching. And so clearly Facebook is pushing that out to everyone's feed quickly. And that seems to happen on YouTube as well. Instagram, though, the interesting thing I've noticed is that I keep getting these live notifications. And we've talked about how, like, it puts you right to the front of where Instagram stories show up. But, and I haven't found any concrete information on this, it seems like Instagram limits only 4 live things in your feed at once. So that's just something to be aware of, that it's gotten pretty noisy, not only in the messaging to fans, like suddenly, you know, there was like late March where it was like every day I was just getting bombarded on every platform with information about live streams from different artists. Like it all had to happen right now. And so you might need to take a step back, take a deep breath, and plan a little bit more strategically. Whether it's the time you're choosing, time of day, I mean, there's some experimenting you should do, but also, you know, maybe a lot of bands in your genre, or, you know, bands that, you know, your fans also like might be doing live streams. Maybe, you know, think about doing it the next week, or, you know, there's just a lot of activity around it all of a sudden. So there's a little bit more consideration in my mind.
Well, I think in this way, it might be worth thinking of it like a show. Like a concert, only in that if it's just another show that's happening on a Wednesday night and there's 14 other bands playing in town, who cares? And that's the effect I have. I'm on Instagram at like 10 o'clock at night, and I have multiple friends all alive at once. I can't watch them all. And so I have that feeling that it's becoming noise, and I'm just going to put the phone down and watch Netflix with my wife anyways. So, but if you back up, like you're saying, and say, how can I make this special? The same way you might think about a big show, like don't play every single week in your town, maybe play once every month or once every 3 months and make it a real special event. And that's where the themes can come in. You know, if you go live every other week and there's some really special differentiating factor to the thing, that also gives you time to email your list and, you know, promote it in advance on social or whatever. So it becomes more of an event than just, hey, there's another musician going live.
Yeah, I think the idea of thinking of it as a special event and putting a little bit more thought into it, especially if you're an artist that is you know, trying to really engage with fans. I've got a point about what the major label artists were doing. You already started to talk about it. We'll get to that in a minute. But I think, yeah, we've seen some bad patterns thrown out there. It's like, this is what you need to do. I think you can still make it very special for your fans, and don't make it just this random thing that it seems to be happening every day. Make it special. Make it something that it's like must see live streaming. You know, they used to call it must see TV for Thursday nights. Make it must see live streaming, like make it special. Because, you know, I haven't seen any impact on Facebook that I'm aware of, but, you know, if your fans follow multiple bands on Facebook and they're all live streaming at the same time, someone's not going to be at the top of the feed. But on Instagram specifically, I think it is limited. I have not seen it go beyond allowing four live streams in your feed at once, because it still wants you to see all your stories. So I think on Instagram, it may actually be hurting some reach. I could be wrong, but I've, like, between the 7 to 9 p.m. at night Pacific time, that thing has just been completely full. And I keep getting so-and-so just went live, so-and-so just went live, and it doesn't keep adding live icons down the story feed. So just some things to consider. Moving on. Truth. Selling tickets to live streams is still not proven for indies, or maybe majors. But there's some interesting options popping up. The funny thing is suddenly there's all these tech companies offering solutions.
That's what you put in quotes earlier.
The funny thing is, what a lot of people who haven't been paying attention, those of you been listening to the podcast for a long time, know we've been talking about this for years and years and years, all the way back to Ustream. When Ustream was new, and that has come and gone, and artists have been trying stuff for a long time. There have been multiple online concert platforms designed around selling tickets that have come and gone out of business and are no longer, because of the fact that this is totally unproven, that people will pay a substantial amount of money to see a live stream. And, you know, it was interesting because I was thinking, you know, pay-per-view used to be a thing. I even paid for like a Guns N' Roses concert way back in the day. But I just feel like now that there's so much content online and on YouTube, I don't need to pay for that Guns N' Roses concert. I can just search Guns N' Roses and see 1,000 different fan uploads from that show that night. And so I think the idea of what people think about it, as far as the value of paying for it, does not line up with the idea of just charging regular ticket prices for a live stream.
Yeah, well, this totally lines up with one of my notes, which is that not every live stream is worth something in terms of money. Not every live stream is worth paying for. And I think this depends on where you're at in your career and how big or how loyal your audience is. Like, you know, you could probably use Stage It or, you know, gate a broadcast behind something, some paywall, like, and that's cool. Like, if your fans really are willing to pay for that and you can do it, then sure, why not? Because you are making up revenue that you're losing because you can't tour. But I think a lot of artists think that they're at that place and they're really not. And they should probably just be going live in the places where people are already hanging out. We're already on Facebook. We're already on Instagram, YouTube, you know, Twitch, Twitter, whatever. Those are free platforms where everyone already is. And it's really requires a lot of your fan to want to go somewhere else and pay for something, particularly all the more so if you're still treating this like a concert, because then what they're paying for is a substandard version of what they want to get live. You know, if you've got the live streaming thing down and it's really entertaining in its own right, then sure, maybe it's worth paying for, but that's just me agreeing with you, I guess.
Yeah, some platforms like Bandzoogle, our friends over at Bandzoogle, just launched a paywall, but it requires you to use Zoom there was another platform, I forget. But the social aspect is removed from it. So I'm curious to see if you're an artist and you've tried some of these paywalls. I'd love to hear from you. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. But this is one of those things where there's another company called Veeps that we're potentially partnering with, that they've pivoted and created this live paywall. They were normally focused on managing premium experiences at concerts, like the artist could pay for those, you know, VIP experiences at a show, as opposed to letting the promoter handle it and all that. But they've pivoted some to do a live stream paywall. So I'd love to hear if people are trying it, if it's working. My opinion is similar to what you just said, Chris, that it becomes a concert, which changes the nature of what it is. And then it's a lesser version of a concert. So if you're going to try the paywall route, my advice is it definitely needs to be must-see live stream. So I and what I mean by that in my mind, I was just thinking, okay, if Small Town Poets, if I was back east with all the guys and we were sitting there, how do we live stream something right now? What I would do is I would lean into the nostalgia and I would go get some of our friends from some other bands that were popular around the same time as our peak label days and do a paid live stream where we do some collaboration together that you can only see by paying. Then it becomes something special. It becomes leans into the nostalgia. It's like, oh, I got to see this. They're getting all those guys, those bands back together to do something cool together. That might be worthwhile. But if it was just us playing some songs, I think I'd rather have the social component, people broadcasting out and telling their friends to see this over the couple hundred bucks we might make, if mm-hmm. that. It'd probably be more like 50. Because my next point is you cannot charge the same for a live stream as you would your concert. That's another truth. You cannot, it's just not the same value and the perceived value by the end users. And so in those cases, the social component plus a tip jar may be your best option. And I know in the next episode, we're going to be talking to an artist who's making loads of money that way. So we'll get all those tips about a tip jar from her. But that's just one of those things. It's not the same thing. And so if you think, okay, I'm going to put up a paywall, charge $10 a ticket, you might be streaming to just your mom and dad who paid 20 bucks.
Yeah, well,
that would also be my fear. That's what I
If you're a touring artist who's used to, let's say you sell 50 tickets in every city you're in, like, well, that's cool. But if you perform on not an open platform, but what's the term? You know, I don't know, a social, let's just say it's Facebook. Suddenly you can make up in reach and quantity more sizable audience as opposed to just those 50 people. And you can make it up in maybe they all give you $2 through PayPal or Venmo or something. But because you're reaching more people, you can still make good money, which I think is what you're going to talk to Dawn about, right?
Yep.
In the next episode.
Yep. We're going to talk about that. And so that should be a good one. All right. Next one. This, we've already alluded to this truth, this universal truth. The major label artists are training fans that this is a fun, cute, spontaneous thing, and they're not doing a very good job at it. You know, the funny thing is somebody, a very respected music business media outlet reached out to me this week for a quote on whether or not artists were doing better. And so I wrote this thing saying, this is the moment that indies have been building towards forever, unknowingly, in that we have always been leading the charge on online innovative ways to connect with fans because we have to. We don't have this mass market and this mass market budget and mentality like the major labels do, where they spend, you know, $1 million making a project. They need to get that money back. And so they have to go mass market. For us, it's all connecting with individuals online. They're real people. If I just get this real person to listen to my real music and have some sort of authentic experience, I've got a fan. And that's how we've approached it. And live streaming has been in our arsenal for many years. And so it's something that we've been doing and trying and testing and having success and failures. But all of a sudden, these major label artists just jump into it. And for them, it's just playing some half-assed songs down in front of the camera.
Which is exactly what my friend was complaining about when he tuned into that band he loves.
Well, and there was a couple things that I found confusing as time went on as a response, and why I think artists at this point, one, we know that the world is not going to feel normal for a while. Not talking about whether or not I can go get a haircut, which I desperately need, and the picture of that I post on Instagram stories with this recording, it'd be quite obvious. Wow, Kevin really needs a haircut. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the idea of it feeling like we're back in the normal flow of touring and accessibility to gigs and all that kind of stuff. That's going to be a while. And so what was confusing to me was watch major label artists from, like, again, that weird mid-March date, suddenly everyone felt like they had to do a nightly live stream. I'm going to do it, keep doing it until this is over. And the one of the major label artists I saw, the first, I think I saw the second day they did it. It felt inspired. It felt like, you know, it felt like they were capturing an emotional moment with their fans. Some of the songs, you know, I thought the performances were a little, you know, shaky. I could probably find a whole lot of cover versions of someone with a guitar singing that were much better than they were doing. And then as each day went on, it kept getting worse and worse. I'm like, no one's making you do this. This is not how we cure coronavirus. You don't have to live stream every day until this is done. And then I saw another major label artist doing the same thing. And again, it felt like, you know, it was fine. They were connecting with their fans, but it felt pretty sloppy. And at the same time, what was frustrating to me is that I felt like you're training all these music fans that this is what the live stream experience is. And so therefore, it felt like it was being devalued.
If I won't guess out loud which ones you're talking about, but one of them, did they kind of give up after 2 weeks or so?
I don't know.
There's one I thought was doing a decent job of it. And then I think they just got tired and was like, I got to put my energy elsewhere. And
that might be the one that I'm thinking of. But also, you know, I kept thinking, your catalog is big, but it's not that big. I don't necessarily need to tune in to see you play the deep, deep, deep cuts from your catalog, because that's going to feel weird. And plus, you know, both of these people that I'm thinking of in my head are from rock bands, and it was just the lead singers, which were the main writers, and, you know, they can play a lot of the songs themselves, but at the same time, you know, there's certain things that you need the band. So anyway, that was my observation, that I felt like indies were leading the charge, like this innovative way to connect with people. And then, you know, just like they like to do, the majors come in and like, oh, look at this new thing, live streaming. We got to do it every day now and mess it up for the rest of us. But anyway, that I bring that up to partly just poke fun at them, but also the idea that your fans' perceptions of what a live stream is may be shifting or being recalibrated by what the major label artists are suddenly doing at high volume. I've been seeing a lot of major label artists also kind of just turn them into gab sessions with friends or like just random DJ things. So again, you may have to make your thing more special.
Good advice.
All right. Number one, or not, what did I say? Number one, four, number one. Start talking about major labels and I got all fired up, Chris, and lost my train of thought. The next one. Selling tickets can be a major trade-off from social sharing. And that's one thing that I mentioned a bit. But if you're going into this as like, hey, I'm going to try selling tickets, the platforms that are doing that, once someone pays and gets behind a paywall, the platforms you're using in order for it to preserve the fact that they paid a ticket to get access won't allow for social sharing. So you may be better off doing something that gets people sharing. And there are some new features in specifically Facebook Live I'm going to talk about at the end that I noticed during your live stream, Chris, that I had not ever seen before. And they seemed brand new because I had watched some live streams pretty recently and hadn't noticed those features before.
I don't know if I know what they are, so I'll be glad to hear it.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
I had two quick truths that I think are interrelated. One is that the first 3 minutes is way more important than the last 57 minutes. Or in my case, the first 3 minutes are more important than the last 7 hours and 57 minutes. Basically, what happens in the first song or the first few minutes is important for two reasons. One is because that's when you need to get people quickly engaged asking them a question that prompts them to reply in the comments, getting them to like, interacting somehow with this broadcast, so that the algorithms notice this and say, oh, people are enjoying this. We should share this with a few more folks. And when they do, if those people start engaging, you know, it's the usual thing of social algorithms, it shares it to more and more people. So you want to quickly get folks involved. In that way, the first song is more important than everything that follows. But in another way, it's really important too, because that's the segment of your live stream that everyone who doesn't catch it live, that's what they're going to see first. And which, so that'll be the thing that most people see. Not everyone's going to keep going and watching the whole thing. So you got to make sure that first song really counts. And, you know, Rick Barker recommends that people take a pause after the first verse or the first chorus and kind of cycle through the chords a little bit if you're playing on a guitar or a piano. And that's the time to pause and ask a question and get people involved quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing I was going to say, the other truth is that beginning is the hardest part, and just going live, you know, we have all this preparation and anxiety or whatever before just pressing live. And so you got to kind of accept that. And if you're in the plane ready to parachute out, it's that moment where you just got to jump. That becomes
great. All great. Going live is like jumping out of an airplane.
No, but it is, assuming you have a parachute. Knowing that that first song or those first few minutes are really, really important makes that going live even more stressful. So whatever you can do to healthily get to the point where you just press live. Also, you can always delete it later if you make a total fool of yourself. So don't stress. Just get used to pressing the go live button.
Yeah, I like what I've seen you do. And I think that's really good advice, because there is that moment where you press go live and like, what do I do? Do I just start my first song? There's nobody here yet. Or I like the idea of just start strumming and realizing that people are joining in. So it's almost like you're the MC of the event, going, all right, I'm, you know, in your case, you kind of like, I'm Chris Robley, I'm doing this thing. Hey, I see so-and-so's front here from Portland. Hey, thanks for being here. And, you know, taking that moment to engage with people, let them know that you recognize them, and you don't have to dive right into a song. You can just keep strumming some chords and talk a little bit. The thing when you were saying all that, I think ultimately what you're trying to do is train those people in the first 15, 30 seconds, maybe a minute, of how they need to participate in this. Like, feel free to ask a question, leave a comment. If there's a song that you want to hear, if you got a question about one of my albums or about me as an artist or what a lyric means, feel free to do that. And we'll get to that between songs. And then you tell people like, oh, this is active participation. And yeah, that's part of the idea of a live stream compared to the concert experience.
Well, that was another truth that I wanted to mention. Your audience does not know what to do. You need to tell them, whether it's to donate to a cause like I was asking them to do, or to just tip you via Venmo and PayPal, or hey, you can leave requests, as you're saying. Just, they need to be given permission. They need to be informed about what the possibilities are for them to direct this broadcast and to communicate with you. And they kind of need to be told. They need to be encouraged.
Along those lines, I think one of the key things with a live stream that is totally different than the concert experience to some extent is that part of it is the community aspect that can happen in the comments. Like, I started seeing people during your live stream, Chris, talking to each other like, oh, hey, how you been? Oh, I haven't seen you. Oh, what? Oh, I used this to record that. Oh, cool, man. And the people start talking back and forth. And then it's like, oh, Chris is going live. Maybe so-and-so will be there watching again. I'll say hi. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
It starts to have that communal thing that, oh, I'm going to go hang out with at the Chris Robley live stream because there's like-minded people there, and I always have a good time chatting with the folks there. there's that aspect to it. And I think people that recognize that and play into it are the ones that are going to see the most success and most fruit out of the efforts of going live.
Totally.
All right. This is, I think, a major truth and maybe controversial. The live stream formula doesn't work for a lot of genres. And then in parentheses, I had without production, especially louder genres.
I have to just jump in and say, I concur if what you're expecting to do is to play a concert or a show in the way that you always do. And I have a friend in a rock band. They're mostly sort of like a 90s alt-rock cover band. But he's been doing these really good broadcast live streams. He uses OBS Studio, and he goes on, and what he's doing is pulling in YouTube videos that fans have shot of the band. He's talking over those. It's like a commentary. He brings on people to interview, talks about their gear. He's been able to totally make a really engaging live stream that isn't a perform, or it's not a live performance, but it's still super interactive. And, you know, because he's flying in the YouTube videos, you still get the full band experience. It's pretty cool what he does.
Well, that's a great idea. But that's what I'm talking about is like the idea that we're going to play, we can't play the show Friday, so we're going to play live stream. We're going to set up in the garage. We're going to put the computer there, and our metal band is going to play at full volume. That will probably be a miserable experience for the people listening just because it'll be so distorted. And, you know, I've referenced it before. I've seen multiple artists on Facebook for years, like they've got a gig and they just live stream it from their phone sitting next to their amp shooting up their nose. And I'm like, why am I watching this distorted audio and this very awkward view of your body? And it's just like all distortion. That is not that's not what live streaming is about. To me, there are other options. And we're going to talk about some of those coming up in just a second. But there are other options. And I think some other bands, very popular bands, have shown us some good opportunities because they're in the same boat. I think that just being honest, that if you are a singer-songwriter and can just play an acoustic guitar, or your band, like Small Town Poets, we got known and still are known for these acoustic sets we do. So for us, it's a natural extension of what we do to go and live stream an acoustic thing. It's not how we want to be perceived all the time, but it works for us. But for some bands, that's just not how it works. And then some genres, by nature of it, it may not work with that interaction piece. So it's just a truth that all genres are not equal when it comes to the opportunities for live stream or how easy it is to accomplish. You can have a metal band doing a live stream full blown, but you're going to need some production to get a mix in order to make sure that it sounds okay.
I think if you do EDM or hip hop or things that are more electronically produced, you could still do a pretty compelling live stream, I think. And I've seen on Twitch a number of, you know, DJs and electronic producers and stuff being able to pull off their music, but still be engaging. So don't, you know, still try it. I think if I totally understand the super loud volume. Metal band sort of problems, particularly if you're just setting up one camera that also has the built-in mic on it, then that can be a nightmare because there's that trade-off. Okay, we got to get the camera close enough to see people, but we can't have it so close that the mic gets blown out. So,
and that leads into my next truth, and we've talked about some of this, but it was like you must engage with attendees and talk to the camera, not just talk awkwardly around the room, but like look at the camera, which takes some getting used to. But otherwise, it can feel voyeuristic or just boring or something that should just live on YouTube as a regular YouTube video. Like for that instance where you just talking about the metal band, if I move the camera so far back and it looks like I just popped into a rehearsal room, why not just record a video, put your audio on top of it and put it on YouTube and have a better experience.
Totally.
As opposed to feeling like, this is weird. I feel like this lone individual that just popped into their room. They're just playing music. This is weird. It's not intended to just be look like I'm, you know, playing webcam roulette. Oh, here's a metal band. I'm watching them. The last truth I had was you don't need fancy equipment, but there are some audio best practices. And I know in the next episode, we're going to talk to you, Chris, and a couple other artists and sort of talk about what you're doing to get good audio. But yeah, you don't need fancy equipment. A phone, especially if you're doing acoustic stuff or lower volume stuff, your phone picks up amazing audio, and Facebook, if you're using Facebook particularly, compresses it where it actually sounds like a decent mix. As long as you know how to play together in the same room at appropriate volume. So, you know,
I had that point as well. One truth I wanted to say is your gear can be your enemy. And I think the fancier your setup, the less likely you will be eventually to go live. Like, you'll put work in, it'll sound good, you'll do it a few times, and then you'll realize that it's a pain to, particularly if you use that same gear for other applications. If you're using the same pedal to record or to play live or whatever, like, I don't mean live streaming, but actually going out and gigging, like, the more stuff you have, it just becomes a pain. So I would say to find the happy medium between where you're comfortable. Like for me, I don't love singing into a room, like just acoustically without a microphone. And I think that is just sort of partially the way I sing. I like to sing a little quieter on certain things. I like to have a little reverb. So that's where I feel most comfortable. But then again, when we talk about gear next time, I'll talk about the things that I started off using that ended up becoming more of a hindrance than they were worth. But yeah, so find the happy medium and don't weigh yourself down with too much fanciness.
One thing I like that you adjustment you made based on, you know, what you just said is that you don't like singing into an empty room. And so you felt like when you added that mic stand that it drastically elevated your performance to feel more real, natural, and like a concert would feel compared to someone just sitting in front of a webcam.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it has to do with a certain like feeling of vulnerability about my voice totally dry. But yeah, just that one little thing suddenly gave me like more confidence. So,
all right. Well,
I had a few quick things I wanted to add.
Okay, go ahead.
So one thing is we were talking about if you're just a, you know, acoustic guitar player, you've got kind of got it made in this realm, which is sort of true. It's easier for you to do a live stream than a metal band. But also guitars might not just, particularly at the very beginning of your broadcast, just a dude strumming a guitar might not be enough to capture anyone's attention. So try to have something else in the first few moments of that broadcast, whether you're dancing like a maniac, or in my case, I have my little stuffed alpaca that I show on the screen. Just something weird to grab someone's attention and pull them into what you're doing, even if the rest of your broadcast is just you playing an acoustic guitar. Let's see, what else? You kind of touched on this, but you don't have to do it alone. Like, you can bring on guests. You can have a co-bill. You know, Instagram lets you do the split screen thing. You were talking about doing a mini festival with a bunch of other bands to kind of play on the nostalgia. So yeah, think about some ways to collaborate. I mentioned my friend Brad doing this with his band 13 Black. They're the 90s alt rock band. Basically, your live streams don't always have to be performances. You might be able to teach us something or tell us a joke or give us a tour of your home studio or, you know, really anything that you want to think through it. Don't just go live and then be like, oh, what do I say? But, you know, they don't always have to be performances. And then what was the last point I wanted to make? Oh, lighting and framing and cameras. To some degree, they matter less than you might imagine. Like, you don't need a big production. But also, like, there's just a few simple tricks that can make a big difference. Like, you don't want bright light sources behind you. You're going to want to have the bright light source in front of you, so your face is well lit. And that could just mean daylight through a window. If you don't have fancy lights, like, just set up near a window. That really is the most natural light source. Anyways, you don't want to put if you're using the mic on your iPhone, you don't want to just put it next to a super hard flat surface, because then you'll get weird echoey reflections. Be careful about mirror mode. You know, if your video is flipped and suddenly everyone has to read PayPal and Venmo backwards, that's not very helpful. So to try to flip that to make it easily readable and digestible, particularly if you're trying to raise money that way.
I think that's a problem on Instagram. That's the one platform that I know. I saw an artist go live on Instagram. The sign looked normal, but she said, "Sorry about last time where the sign looked backwards." She was pointing out the Venmo and PayPal.me thing. And she's like, "This sign's actually written backwards, so it'll show up normal for you guys."
Oh, she really prepared. That's great. That's awesome.
She did. It looked, I'm like, and then I started thinking, I don't know if I could pull that off. I'd still spend half a day trying to write a sign backwards.
Yeah. Like a few other things on the technical front. Like I was saying, there's that trade-off if you're using the same device between mic placement and where the camera is placed. So, you know, play with that a little bit if you only have one device for this stuff. For framing, I would say the most important thing is your face being up front more so than someone seeing the instrument because, you know, the emotion and the expression is in your face. And this is my one regret about my 8-hour live stream last week is I had a camera switcher. I had three cameras set up. I programmed an automatic camera switcher that would go between a camera that was really close up on my face. That would be like, I think I had it set for like 8 or 10 seconds. And then it would switch to a wider view of the room so you could see me playing guitar, like my whole body. And then for, you know, a few seconds, you'd get a close up of my hand playing the guitar and it would just sort of loop like that. But it broke literally 2 minutes before I pressed go live. It wouldn't work for some mysterious reason. And so I basically had to use one webcam the entire time. And I don't think I did as good a job as I should have getting my face sort of up front. But if you can, I think that's, and if you have to make a trade-off, your face is more important than someone seeing your whole body.
Agreed. The one point you mentioned about the lighting, I think it's so crucial. Getting in front of a window is, like you said, a nice big window. Shooting at your face where the camera is, you know, looking at you, not the window, can be really great, even very attractive lighting. If you don't have that option, whether you live in a basement, apartment, or it's just dark and rainy all the time where you live, like where I live, there are some amazing ring lights on Amazon that are so cheap. I just bought one myself and it's become so handy. Part of the reason I bought it was just because now that we do all our conference calls over video, I didn't want my face looking all dark and like I'm disinterested or a part of the witness protection program and all these meetings. And so it's a super affordable light. I think this one was like $25, but it's already been worth it. And it even had an iPhone holder that came with it so you can hold the phone in between. I shot my infomercial for Small Town Poets about our t-shirts using the ring light. And super handy. So those things can be very helpful and make it just look much more engaging. Like if people are scrolling down the feed and they see this live thing that's well lit, that's more, you know, like, oh, I'll check this out. If it looks like someone's all in their dark, grainy basement, you can barely see their face, that's kind of creepy. I don't want to look at that.
Well, brings up one interesting element about this is like, whatever your setup and whatever room you're in, you are inviting people into your own private world. And I know that can feel very strange and awkward, but if you can get past that, I think it's good to remember that when you're inviting people into your own world, it gives you permission to be even more yourself. And if you, you know, whatever that means, you can find a way to be you. That's why people are tuning in anyways. Again, because this isn't a concert. They don't want to see the you that's on stage and some huge star like Beyonce. They want to see Beyonce at home and what's her life really like to some degree. So be you.
You think Beyonce is normal at home?
No, I think she's always got a golden mic and dancing everywhere from room to room.
I thought that was her natural state. on that note, also, you are inviting people in your home. Make sure whatever is behind you is something you don't mind people seeing. Whether that's a messy bed or your political statement on the wall, whatever, just keep in mind that you may have some things in your personal life that you're like, hey, that just needs to stay in my personal life, but I just broadcast it on the internet. So
your coffee table with like three bongs and like a bunch of empty pizza right. boxes. Maybe tidy that up first.
Yeah.
Or don't.
You know, unless that's what you're going
that
for.
That might be your brand.
So here's a couple things that I've noticed recently that are worth checking out. You're like, live streaming is not for me. There's some new things and more will be popping up. So keep your eye out for new things. But here's one you may not have noticed. YouTube recently launched YouTube Premiere. I think it actually launched like in the fall, but they just started promoting it more. And this is an amazing opportunity for you to take a video and make an event out of it. So you have a video, it shows up on your account, people can't watch it, and it's labeled Premiere, and it at a specific time will go live, and there's the interactive chat function. And so you can create a video event. And what I thought was so genius about what I saw is Radiohead has been doing this and taking a lot of live concert videos. You know, they're a band. It's harder to do a live stream. And for some reason, I don't think they're live stream guys.
You know, they actually did one, like, it might have been like 20 years ago at this point, but they actually were one of the first bands I ever saw do a live stream. And it was amazing. It was weird.
Really?
It was a very Radiohead kind of live stream, but it was really good.
I'll have to see if I can find that. They've got all these concert videos that they've filmed. And, you know, if you've been paying attention, they've made a big deal about their website actually releasing a lot of this content. But they've been doing YouTube premieres for these concert events. And I thought, that's an amazing idea. If you're a band and you've got a great, whether it's just one song, like a live track, or a whole concert that's a concert experience, make an event out of it. Use that premiere feature. Email your fans. Say, Friday night, we're all going to sit and watch. We can chat about the latest album. We can chat about the live show. We can just hang out and chat and talk and watch the show together. That's a cool feature. There's a similar feature on Facebook called Watch Party. I think the one thing is that's very different is Watch Party doesn't seem to be schedulable, if that's a word. You can't schedule it out in advance like an event. They may change that very shortly, but all the research I did online didn't allow for that to be the case. What it looks like you have to do is, like, if I'm an artist, I would say, hey, Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific time, we're going to have a watch party around our latest video. And then you would just upload that video and create a watch party. And basically everyone is watching the video at the same time. It works better with longer formats, but also at the same time with a watch party, they can be short videos and you can almost create like a playlist. So you can keep throwing videos in there, but they have to be native to Facebook. So there might be some pre-planning that needs to happen, but that's kind of a fun idea as well. Similar to what you were saying, Chris, where the live stream was more about them curating some other videos, but Watch Party is specifically designed to do that. It's almost like whoever launches the launch party, the watch party is the video DJ, and, you know, there's chats going on and stuff like that. But everybody's seeing the exact same moment. It's not like, I think YouTube premieres the same way. Like for the first, when the premiere goes live, say that video is an hour long. No matter when people jump in, they're going to jump in at the same spot for that first watch. Mm-hmm. So everyone's in the same spot, seeing the same thing. It's kind of a fun thing. Another thing that seems to be brand new that I had not heard of, but when I was researching Facebook Watch Party came across, is there's this new thing called Facebook Stars. And Facebook Stars is a feature that allows you to monetize your live videos. Viewers can buy stars and send them to you while you're live or on past live videos that have stars enabled, and stars is capitalized. So that's the name of the program. Every star you receive, Facebook will pay you a penny.
And how much does the user pay for the star?
I'm not sure. It got pretty convoluted. It felt like this seems like it was brand new. In fact, someone just mentioned this in the office, like they'd gotten messaging from Facebook. So I might have just stumbled across it as they were just putting information on the web. But it seemed like, all right, they have to go do this, and then they do this, and then you have to have this enabled. And like, it's just easier to put a PayPal.me link and just let them give me money.
Right. Particularly if they have to spend a penny to give you a penny.
Yeah, and I didn't know how, like, how many stars is like, hey, you get 100 stars for $2 and Facebook keeps a penny and you get a penny, or I don't know. It was just interesting. But the thing I'm appreciative is that they're trying. They're trying. So we'll see. And then the newish features that I noticed on your Facebook Live is that in the comment stream, Facebook was encouraging me to share it. And I hadn't noticed that before. I can't remember the last time I watched a Facebook Live stream. It wasn't that long ago. And I didn't see that happening, where this was an actual like prompt. If it had been there, it was much more visible. It looked like it had been redesigned. And it was definitely encouraging me to share in order to create like a watch party type environment. That's how I ended up like going, doing more research. What is that watch party feature I keep hearing about?
I just had a question. So like, I really appreciate on Instagram and Facebook when you get those little prompts, it's like, you know, say hi so they know you're here, or, you know, click this so you'll never miss a live stream from this person. All those things are great. The one thing I'm not sure. So like when I was playing live, I was actually seeing comments through this thing called Restream Chat, which is an app that's supposed to be aggregating comments from YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, which were the three platforms where this broadcast was going. So I can see all the comments in one place. But what I don't think happened is I don't think I can see comments from watch parties. Like if you're having your own, you know, sort of private watch party with your friends of my video and you're commenting on that feed, I don't think I can see that.
I don't think you can either.
Which
because
is a bit of a bummer, because like they're still looking at my broadcast and I'd hope that they could interact with me in the same way that you would if you were just watching it directly, you know, in your feed or on my page or whatever. But anyways, that's, I guess, more of a question than a statement.
I can tell you from my research that the watch party feature was originally created for groups. So it was something you could only initiate inside your group. So if you had a group of like sci-fi film fans, you could launch a watch party inside of that group. It was more recent that they expanded it to be available to everybody. So, and or be launched outside in just your normal feed and invite your friends. So my assumption would be that you are correct, that at the moment that does not work. One thing that was new is that Facebook was highlighting people who I knew that I was friends with, that they were in the live stream. So anybody that I was friends with was highlighted bright green. And it would say like we were watching you, and Erica from our team was also watching, and she was highlighted in bright green. It's like Erica is also watching. So that was something new that I thought was really cool, because they're trying to drive the community aspect that, oh, now I'm going to go say hi to that person and let them know I'm also watching. The other thing that I noticed is it highlighted to me all of my friends that started watching because I shared the link. So it said, like Peter Swenson, our friend Peter, he joined because of the link I shared. And so it said, Peter joined because of your shared link. And so it not only was it saying my friend was there, but it was saying he's here because of you. So those were just some new features that I thought were, that were nice features to help drive that communal aspect of it.
You know, this is making me feel bad about something else. I never shared it to my own profile while it was going on. So I went live on my page. Damn it. I should have just taken a moment and shared it on my own friggin' profile. Oh, well.
You failed.
The next time I do an 8-hour broadcast, I'll remember.
You had a few things to remember.
I know.
Like 8 hours worth of music.
It's funny when you prepare for anything like that. Like you always let some really obvious things slip. Well, I don't know. I always let some obvious things slip that could have had a bigger impact. But
no, I do the same thing, especially whenever, you know, our band is has limited access to being together. So when we're together and I'm like, oh, let's do this thing and that thing, I'll be like later that night kicking myself. I can't believe I didn't push share to that.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Another thing I didn't do is I did send an email, I think the week prior, saying this thing is going to happen at this time on these platforms. But then I should have, the moment I went live, like had an email ready to send and just press send, or even scheduled it to send, you know, a minute after I was live. I didn't do that either. See, all these things.
Yeah.
We
maybe you would have raised 20,000. Maybe we should be like, man, only 10. Oh, Chris, what was your problem?
I know.
If you had sent that other email. All right. Well, if you have feedback or questions or comments, if you've, especially if you're trying stuff, whether with video premieres or just video in general during this pandemic or live streaming, we'd love to hear about it. So 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we've got a call and an email. And let's get to that right now, Chris.
Hey guys, my name is Carlene Prince and I am calling from Montana. I just recently discovered CD Baby as I'm getting ready to put out my first couple of albums. And so I've been listening to a couple of my first podcasts. Thank you guys for all the knowledge base that you support us artists with. Because I'm a complete brand newbie, I have several questions as I'm on a steep learning curve, first time again releasing some albums. And yes, you heard correctly, plural albums. I have two albums that are made to kind of be a listening journey that are going to be coming out together at the same time, which is I'm finding fun and complicated at the same time because you're releasing more than one project at the same time. So here's a couple of my random questions in no particular order. One is, since it is two albums coming out together, is it possible with CD Baby to be releasing those on the same date? Any complications that you can see with that? And if I've uploaded one album, can I change the release date on that if the second album's taking a little bit longer to finish up? Next question would be, I read in the help section that if you want a Spotify for Artist profile with the little blue verification check mark, and if this is your very first thing that you've released out there and you don't have a Spotify for Artist profile already, you have to go through CD Baby for that. And I'm curious if down the road, if I ever, God forbid, needed to move on from CD Baby at some point, do I lose those artist profile or the blue verification check marks on any of those spots? Another one is for the artist sounds like or genre category. I have an eclectic mix of the styles of songs on these two albums because, again, it's kind of meant to be this listening journey that's got some highs and lows, and we kind of break format in a couple of the songs. So any suggestions on how best to pick that? Also for the artist sounds like category, first time out there, and I could ask friends, but I think it'd be so subjective because they all have their opinions of people completely different on the spectrum that I sound like. So I'm assuming that's something that cannot be amended later. So what are your recommendations for how best to pick artists that I would sound like when I really don't know? I think it's so subjective to other people's opinions, but I don't want to put stuff out there that, of course, doesn't match that. So those are my questions, and thanks again for all you guys do. Appreciate your help. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Chris, you want to tackle some of those?
Yeah, so I don't know if I can remember all of them, but the very first question was, can you release two things on the same day? And yes, you can, but I would think long and hard about that, or short and hard, and maybe change your plans, because if you do that, you're going to be missing out on the chance to suggest through the Spotify for Artists pitching tool a song from both of those albums. You're basically going to have to choose one, because you can only have one song that you pitch to Spotify at a time for that purpose. So, you know, if it's integral to the story of the release that they come out together, go ahead and do that. But if you can, maybe hold one back a few weeks and give Spotify the chance to consider one of those songs and serve it to people through Release Radar. And then a few weeks later, you can then also, you know, have another song in the queue for that same purpose. And if none of that made any sense, you could check out our article on the DIY Musician blog about submitting a song directly to Spotify for editorial consideration.
I would agree with you, Chris, that to me, releasing all that music on the same day is a missed opportunity to create more of a season of release. I talk a lot about that when I'm speaking to artists about, instead of looking at one specific release day, think about a season of release where you can tell a bigger story. And to me, if you've got multiple volumes of music, that's what you, that's the perfect setup for being able to say, hey, here's part one of the story coming out this Friday. In 2 weeks or next month, part two comes out. And that way it gives you opportunity to take time telling the story. And, you know, then there's also the practical things like what you mentioned, Chris, about release radar. The Spotify is only going to let you pick one song, so you might as well break it up. And also, the people that you get to follow your profile and engage with your music, that gives you the opportunity with that second release to make sure they hear it. Because you know, Spotify will push to release radar and stuff like that.
So that brings up another question about just getting access to Spotify for Artists. And I'm almost positive that we can get you access to that and get you verified. As long as we have delivered music, even if the music's not available yet, it's, you know, requires a little bit of communication with our artist support team. But if you haven't put anything out yet, you might want to consider breaking off a few singles from each of those releases kind of in advance. So you can easily claim that that account, which, by the way, you keep even if you decide to, you know, use a different distributor. Why would you ever do that, though? But no, that is yours. Once you're verified, you retain ownership to your Spotify account. But yeah, maybe think about doing a few singles and then the full album and then maybe a few singles from the follow up release. And it just make it kind of a longer process so you can really get momentum instead of having, I don't know, it just seems like a lot of work to have two albums that you're going to drop at once and lose the sort of, trajectory, I guess, that you could build over a longer period of time.
Yeah, what Chris mentioned about like connecting to Spotify for Artists, you can do that directly through Spotify. You don't need to use your distributor to do that. The only thing we do is we help connect to make sure that the right catalog is assigned to the right artist account, because there are artists with same names or similar names, but you own that completely. You have to have a Spotify account, whether it's free or paid, in order to grab that Spotify for Artist account anyway. So it doesn't stick with your distributor. We just help make sure that the pipes are working properly. And there was one more question in there that she had. I think it was the last one. Do you remember what it was?
Two about Spotify for Artists, and then the last one was about changing if it takes longer to finish one of the albums and she's already signed one up, can she push the release date back? And I'm pretty sure the answer is yes, we can do that, as long as it's not been sent out already or made available. But again, maybe the way you have it now is fine, or you know, maybe delaying the later one is what you might want to do after reconsidering the release strategy.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. We've got an email now. Here we go. It's a longer email, but I thought it was good. And it deals with YouTube. Hi, Kevin and Chris. Really enjoy your podcast. My name is Liz Calloway. I'm a New York singer, actress, and I've been with CD Baby for a number of years and couldn't be happier with all you do for independent artists. I attended your conference in Nashville and learned a lot. I have some questions for you that I haven't been able to find answers to online. I'm hoping you can help. YouTube. At the start of 2020, I gave myself the goal of really upping my YouTube video YouTube game. Since, like everyone else, all my gigs have been canceled, including some in August and October, now I have the time to go deep. This fall, I started an experiment of posting videos on YouTube and social media of me rehearsing my songs in my car. I call them auto tunes. I thought that was clever, and I'm surprised no one, I haven't seen that before. The songs are mostly musical theater, but some pop movie songs, all covers. Some of these have done really well, especially on social media. The minute I put a video up, I get a copyright claim from the publisher. On your recent This and That podcast, you explained these claims and the difference between them and content ID claims. But I still have a question. Since my artist channel only has cover songs, mostly my car videos, live concert videos, and now some at home songs, and a few official music videos, is the only way I can monetize my YouTube channel for content I create is if I get YouTube partner program and have ads, or will these copyright claims prevent me from ever being able to monetize? If I could monetize this way, I need to add a lot more videos so I can up the watch hours to qualify. I currently have about 2,500 subscribers, 1,000 up since November. Hey, nice work. And 2,251 public watch hours of the 4K needed to get in the partner program. So I'll answer that question in a minute. Question number two, I get a nice amount of streams on YouTube Music, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is a result of the art tracks CD Baby delivers for each of my songs. I see them on my artist channel under albums and singles, but since I don't upload them, I can't use the hours people listen to my recordings to count towards the 4,000 needed. I can't upload my own art videos, right? Perhaps I should spend time making lyric videos, etc. Live stream an archived concert? Thanks so much for taking the time to read this. Sorry it's so long. And she sends a link to her auto tunes. And then there's a PS. She says, on a future podcast, I'd love to hear you discuss how musicians might use Instagram story highlights to lead people to their Spotify YouTube channels. I noticed that businesses use the highlights in that way, and I think that would be a good way to get people to my music. So for question number one, you are absolutely correct. The way you monetize your channel as someone who's uploading covers and the content, you know, is being claimed by the publisher, you will need to get to that watch time threshold and join the partner program. There's lots of big YouTubers you can see that are doing this. Peter Hollins comes to mind. He does all these a cappella versions of show tunes and movie themes and things like that. And he doesn't own any of the songs. They're all covers, but his channel is monetized and he makes money off the videos that he creates because he's driving viewership. So yes, you will need to hit that threshold. For your second question, no, your content delivered to YouTube as a part of their streaming service does not count for that because that's separate. It's like a streaming service where they're really looking at your channel, what you as a channel are creating and uploading directly to YouTube. And from my understanding, you could upload your own art tracks. I have have some art tracks for my band on our YouTube channel. They'll let you do that. That's not a problem.
I have an interjection, which is also a question. I was under the assumption that once you are verified for an official artist channel, the watch time gets combined. So if you have YouTube Music content that you didn't directly upload, but now it lives together with your own channel content through an official artist channel, that the watch times do get combined. Is that true?
Huh, interesting. I'm not sure. We'll have to follow up on that because that's a brand. I mean, they haven't even really allowed us to officially announce the official artist channels on YouTube. Even though they emailed all the creators at the beginning of April, I noticed in our, because I have a different YouTube, a different Gmail account for our YouTube channel, I noticed that, oh, they emailed us at the beginning of April. And so I've got one now, but it didn't mention anything about that I recall. It wasn't very clear, honestly, the communication I got from them to the benefits, because it didn't really describe, here's the current state, here's the state you're going to. It sort of assumed I was a YouTube power user, which I am not. But anyway, that's something I'll follow up on.
Well, I guess I'm reading some of the information. What is for certain is that your subscribers get consolidated. So if you have subscribers to Music Topic Channel and your own, those get that combined for sure. Not sure about my previous question though.
Yeah, the subscribers do get combined, which will help you get to that subscriber number, but the watch time is key. To me, it wouldn't make sense for them to combine the watch time because you could have an artist that has a very popular song but doesn't really have a YouTube presence and hasn't really created engaging video content that's worthy of monetizing.
Right.
Because it's really at the end of the day about whether or not your content is quality enough for them to run ads on it. That's why they built that threshold, because if they're selling ads into this, you know, selling ads to people interested in advertising, the advertisers got upset because they kept finding their ads on these like really obscure, you know, sometimes questionable content and being charged as, you know, ad placement. And they wanted to make sure that their ads were getting on videos that at least people were watching with a certain level of engagement and content quality. we'll follow up on that. I've been in YouTube a lot lately during this pandemic. I realized, oh my gosh, I haven't uploaded hardly anything to our YouTube channel in forever because YouTube really wants you to create content in a certain way, just like I'm talking about. It wants you to schedule it out, be more like a consistent channel on a certain topic. And a lot of ways artists we're using YouTube just don't fit into that model. We throw up a video when we have a live video, or here's our official music video. We're not building out a show. And so I had sort of neglected it and saw more value in the social sharing of videos on Facebook. But I've been doing a lot of cleanup on YouTube and our YouTube presence, and I've got a whole list of tips and tricks for artists who are in the same position as myself and a lot of people where I'm not creating a YouTube show or creating a video every week or two a week, but here's a way to do better with it. Because it is the number two search engine on the planet still. And that's pretty powerful. And so you don't want to neglect what's going on there. All right. Well, thanks for the email, Liz. And again, if you'd like to email us or call our listener line, you can at 360-524-2209. That's 360-524-2209. Or you can call our listener line, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com.
You sounded like the voice of what do they call those things? An infomercial.
360-524-2209. That's 360-524-2209. All podcasts are free, so enjoy. I look forward to hearing about what people are trying. If we don't get lots of calls and emails about stuff people are trying online, I feel like we failed.
Yep.
Because there's so much happening that you've got to have experiences, even if it's a massive failure. You know what? I did this. It didn't work. Tell me what went wrong. Or this was amazing. I want to hear it all. Tell us what's working for you right now. And I think that brings us to the end, Chris.
It does, although before we get to the very end, I just thought of another live streaming thing we didn't mention because you said, what are people doing online? And you could remember that a live stream could have secondary goals beyond just raising money or having people watch it and engage. And if so, consider using show.co to encourage people to follow you on Spotify in order to get the information about your next live stream, or to subscribe to you on YouTube before they get access to your broadcast. So if you do go the route where you're gating your live stream, then think about using show.co, which is free.
Yeah, YouTube, this is one thing I probably should have looked up. YouTube has live options, obviously. I think theirs may be able to allow you to put it on a page where you have to go to the page to see it. They don't have as much sharing built in and pushing it across the platform like Facebook does. That's why we tend to talk about Facebook. Facebook made it a very social event. It goes to the top of the feed. YouTube, if someone's on YouTube, it does show up and you subscribe or it recommends. It does recommend live stuff, but it may let you embed an unlisted video and go live behind a follow wall or a paywall. We'll have to double check on that. All right. Well, my final note is that first week when everyone was going live, it felt like, oh, this is kind of a novelty. But not only are we stuck at home, not going out, not doing things, but for a lot of us that are still able to work, we're on video live conference calls all day long. Yep. And the idea of sitting in front of my computer and watching one more live interaction was exhausting feeling after a while. It was really weird to just watch. Like, I'm tired of standing in front of a camera.
Well, yeah, I mean, even away from music, I have that sense. Like, I have friend groups as a college group of college friends, even some local friends here that just, they want to do all these Zoom calls and chat. Like, I don't want to be on Zoom one more second after 5 o'clock. Like, no.
Yeah,
and I feel bad. I feel like a bad friend because I'm just like totally uninterested.
Yeah, we've been using Marco Polo for our band, and so that's like video texting.
I like Marco Polo for that, yeah.
Yeah. So. All right, well, that's going to do it. We'll catch you next time.
See you then.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.